Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show is back from its one-week hiatus. Seth came in fresh off his first 5K in forever?
39 years and 3.5 weeks.
39 years. So he did one in his mother's womb. But other than that, this is the first time he's been in a 5K.
Yeah, it was the color 5K, so I had paint thrown on me along the way, and it was 55 degrees, so going in t-shirt and shorts, not the best of ideas. But a good time, just showing me once again how fat and out of shape I actually am, and that I got embarrassed by my fiance, who ran the whole thing without a problem, while I huffed and puffed to a 390,000th place finish. But did finish.
Well, you know, guys, and Seth, you will concur. You will be embarrassed by your fiance a lot of times over the course of the next 50 to 60 years. So, not a deal. She'll put you to shame many times. It's just the way that couples work.
So I have learned. And I've learned and have been reminded of again and again and again. Not by her, but by everyone, but by everybody else. So,
well, you know, Seth, that's a great way to segue into our first segment about putting people to shame. And we're going to talk with Hall of Famer Lenny Wilkins at the bottom of the hour. Our esteemed colleague and producer Randy Zellier has hooked us up with Lenny Wilkins, Hall of Famer Lenny Wilkins. And we'll talk about basically the embarrassment that the Cavaliers have put on the Hawks. We'll talk a little bit more about his foundation and where he sees the NBA going in the next couple of years. That is at the bottom of the hour. But right now, there are a couple of other things that are going on, including the NHL playoffs. I'm not sure if you caught the Rangers versus the Lightning last night, but the Lightning had a great game, and the Rangers just couldn't put one in the basket.
Well, I saw bits and parts of it, and, you know, Tampa, it's a difficult team to kind of get a hold of. Ben Bishop, you know, is inconsistent, but when on top of his game is as good as anybody. Henrik Lundqvist has not been great in the series, letting up two games with six goals each. You know, Tampa is younger, they're fresher. The Rangers coming off a brutal seven-game series against the Caps, and Tampa Bay has kind of cruised a little bit more through their first two series. The Lightning are up 3-2, which means absolutely nothing because the Rangers, of course, are kind of the kings of coming back from the edge. So this is kind of, the Rangers may have them exactly where they want them.
Well, that may be true. I think the Lightning are going to win this series probably in the next game. I think the Rangers are getting a little tired. If you saw anything out of last night's game, the ex-Rangers, Brian Boyle and Ryan Callahan, had two fantastic games between the two of them. And it just seems like, I hate to say it, but it looks like they want it more. And, you know, that's a subjective standard which I'm putting on them. They are definitely fresher, no question about it. And if Bishop comes to play the way he did last night, they're going to win this series. Now, I think it's interesting, and that brings me to my next subject. So I was in the bar Stout on Friday night. I was watching the game with my brother, my younger brother, and there were people that came up to us and said, oh, you're rooting for the Rangers, right? And we're like, no, we're Islander fans. Well, the Islanders are out, so you're definitely rooting for the Rangers, right? And we're like, no. Well, who's your favorite team? Who's your favorite team now that the Islanders are out? Basically,
anyone but the Rangers.
It's the Rangers. Yeah. any team that faces the Rangers. It's not even a question. So our team will change as the Rangers advance. Our favorite team will change. So it was the Capitals. Now it's the Lightning. As they win, it will probably be the Ducks or the Blackhawks. So I ask you, Seth, you have several teams, and I know Duke is probably the one for Maryland, but you are a fan of several teams. Which is the one team that you hate the most? Because I think everybody has that team. Mine is the Rangers.
The team I hate the most is probably the University of North Carolina. North Carolina, Georgetown, and UConn are probably my top three. The Philadelphia Eagles kind of fall somewhere in that realm as well as a Giants fan. I was brought up with two cousins who went to Duke. As we most of us know, I'm kind of the dumb one of the family. And so I didn't grow up with the hatred of the Dukies as much as everyone else did. Georgetown, you know, when you go to Maryland, North Carolina, Georgetown are pretty evident. Connecticut is for a different reason in regards to some payments that were made to an AAU team that don't need to be discussed because both coaches are now retired.
Was just because of Randy Etzel.
Randy's got himself a pretty good recruiting class coming in. Not much of a coach, but man, he may end up getting an extension now.
Well, I mean, Seth, I think the question is there a team out there that no matter who they play, you would never root for? I mean, that's where my brother and I are on with the Rangers, right? They could play anybody at any time, anywhere, and there is no way we will ever root for the Rangers.
I think North Carolina and Georgetown fit that. I think the three teams I mentioned in college, the pro team would either be the Eagles or the Redskins. Having lived in Washington for the better part of a decade, and having to listen to the ridiculousness that is DC sports radio, it is unbearable. The idea of rooting for the Redskins is unbearable. The idea of listening to hail to the Redskins is unbearable. I cannot imagine ever rooting for them.
But you'd root for them over Dallas.
No, I wouldn't.
I
root for Dallas over the Redskins or the Eagles.
Okay. I mean, it was just an interesting conversation coming from Ranger fans, which I think have the same type of deal. See, the Rangers don't see the Islanders as the rivalry that the Islanders see the Rangers. And I think that happens in a lot of sports, right? I think that happens in your Maryland, North Carolina, or Maryland Duke comparison as well. Maryland sees it as a much more of a rivalry, little child, big child, little son, big son, or older and younger, than, say, the guys from Duke in North Carolina. I don't think they would pick Maryland as their top. They'd pick the other one, whether that be Duke or North Carolina.
The way we used to say it is Duke to Maryland as Maryland is to Virginia. And because Virginia considered our biggest rivals, we considered them second tier. Of course, now we're not in the ACC, so none of it is really relevant anymore.
None of your biggest rivalry is Iowa or Purdue.
Yeah, well, I'm not quite ready to go that far. But a quick shout-out to my beloved Terps winning the women's national championship in lacrosse and getting to the finals and losing in the men's championship today in lacrosse. Plus,
that's
number two.
Congratulations to Maryland for finally winning something. There you go.
we've had a pretty good year, man. I have no complaints. So
We've had a good year.
For those of you who are listening for the first time, you have to understand Sean has an innate bitterness when it comes to his sports teams. Because even when they're supposed to succeed, there's always a negative. A Mets fan who has suffered for the better part of 30 years, a team with young pitching, and now their best player is diagnosed with spinal stenosis, which may end up, David Wright, has been an all-star for how many years consecutively? I don't know. It can be a career-ending injury. Matt Harvey, they're wondering if he has a dead arm, which would be amazing considering it's the middle of May. you know, a team that when they got off to the best, one of the best starts in the majors, and was kind of falling back to earth quickly. Tough week for you, buddy.
Well, we did win today. Look, nobody in their right mind thought that the Mets were going to win this division. I mean, let's call it spade to spade. A playoff contender, possibly. Still there? Yes. Still a playoff contender. But is this our year? No, I don't think anybody actually viewed it that way. I certainly didn't. I was relishing in 13-3. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think every Mets fan was. But at the same time, the realistic Mets fans knew that this was not the year. It will probably be next year that was the year when Zach Wheeler comes back and Matt Harvey is more than a year removed from his Tommy John surgery. It's been a rough couple of days. I mean, we've been swept by the Pirates. We lost a bunch of games to the Cardinals. But you know what? These are the games, the game against the Phillies today, these are the games that the old Mets lost, the games that you needed to win, the games that you should win. If the Mets win the games that they should win, they're going to finish with 82, 85 wins. I call that a successful season. Now, that differs from Yankee fans who think that a championship is the only way to define a successful season. I get that. I'm just not... look, I'm a Mets fan. I'm a realist. Yankee fans, I went to the game today. Nice game. Look, Brian McCann with a nice homer. Chase Heavey with a nice homer. Jeremy Guthrie, 11 runs in two innings. Not exactly the Kansas City pitcher you wanted on the hill today, but it's one game. But you look at the Mets lineup. I was there last Monday. The Mets lineup doesn't scare anybody at all. So, you know what? It just is the way this season's going to be. We're going to have our ups, we're going to have some downs. But as I said, after the 13-3 streak, all we got to do is play 500, and we win 85 games. I'm okay with that.
Kind of going back a little bit, because it's mid-May. Does baseball matter yet? Honestly?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Seth. Try again.
I think, does baseball matter at this point yet or no?
So the Mets?
No, baseball in general.
Baseball in general matters. I mean, look, there's always been the saying that once you get to Memorial Day, you know where your team is. So if you're saying, does the entire sport matter? Sure, it matters.
No,
I don't know where your question is going with that.
I'm just kind of busting on you a little bit. Because you know how much I love my baseball. So, you know, we have Lenny Wilkins at the bottom of the hour, but we were hoping to talk about some conference finals that were, well, that there was at least some doubt about, and there is none. Now, 2 weeks ago when we were on the show, Sean was bragging about his picks of the Clippers, which admittedly looked very good at 3-1.
Yeah, that's it.
But Houston, you know, off of a, simply put, a ridiculous comeback in Game 6, went on to win Game 7, and they have been no match. They were no match for Houston in the regular, for the Golden State in the regular season. They were no match for Golden State in the finals, or in the playoffs. So, I mean, 3-0 going for the sweep tonight. Now, did you see last night any of the Atlanta-Cleveland game? Al Horford was given a flagrant 2 for throwing a Randy Macho Man Savage elbow on Matthew Dellavedova.
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, I was flipping between that and the Ranger game. I definitely saw it. I mean, look, I think the Hawks are a little frustrated. They have a lot of injuries going on right now. They lost Kyle Korver for the rest of the series. They don't have Thad Felt. I can never remember. Their depth is all sorts of gone. So I think they're just a little bit, and Damari Carroll's out. I mean, they have a lot of depth problems, and they have nobody, and I mean nobody, that can guard LeBron one-on-one for an extended period of time. Millsap can do it for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, Carroll is back, but certainly not at 100%. And unfortunately for Atlanta, it does look like a one-year window. Millsap, I believe, is a free agent. Carroll, I know, is a free agent. And, you know, is the team, Horford and Teague will still be there. Do you believe Horford deserved the flagrant too?
Given the situation, no. If that was a regular season game, he definitely would have had one. So I think it's a question of, do you referee the playoffs the same way you would referee the regular season?
Quite profound.
Look, Seth, we ask this all the time, right? Do you call the ticky-tack foul in the last 2 minutes that you wouldn't have called in the first 2 minutes of a basketball game? Do you call the penalty in overtime in hockey that you would have in the first period? It depends on your philosophy in which either A, you believe that the whole game should be refereed the same way, or B, the finality of the game is a little bit more intrinsically important than the first period. To me, I think that it should be ref the same way because your 2 points at the beginning of the game are no less valuable than your 2 points at the end of the game. So I thought it would have been a flagrant two in the first in the first quarter of the first game of the first game of the season. So under my values, if it would have been a flagrant two then, it should be the same flagrant two now.
Both series at 3-0. Do you see either team, Houston or Atlanta, salvaging a game in this series?
I think Houston actually has a better shot of salvaging one than Atlanta. I think Atlanta is done. I think losing Kyle Korver is pretty much the nail in the coffin. And surprisingly, 3 years ago, you would have gone, who? Kyle Korver? You mean the three-point specialist? Well, as we have seen in the NBA is a little different than it was 3-4 years ago. Because without Kyle Korver spacing the floor or helping on the defense, they just don't have it. And I think Houston has a shot at getting one of those games. Do I think they will? Probably not. But here's another question for you based on this, and we'll ask Lenny Wilkins about this at the bottom of the hour. Is the NBA changing to the point that you don't need a center? Because if Golden State wins the whole thing, let's say they win the entirety of it, right? They are the first team without a dominant center to win since the Pistons and before that the Bulls. Do you need a center?
I'm trying to think back to the teams that have won in recent times. Miami, I guess you consider Bosch a dominant center.
Yep.
Dallas Mavericks, Tyson Chandler, a dominant center.
Okay, let me rephrase to dominant center. Dominant big man.
Okay.
A guy on the post. Look, if the Warriors
When was the last time Chris Bosh played on the post?
Well, look, he plays on the post. He may not sit down there the whole time. But he plays on it. Look, if you have Golden State win this, right? If you have Golden State win this title, the majority of the center minutes in the last two rounds have been manned by Draymond Green, who's 6'8". Not Andrew Bogut, not David Lee, but they've been playing small ball the whole round in this round. So when's the last time that you've had a center with the skills and height of Draymond Green?
Not too many. I wish not in the recent, and he's actually, I think actually Harrison Barnes, I think actually Harrison Barnes is even bigger than Green.
But I'm saying,
but yeah,
it's Ben Wallace.
I understand your point. What'd you say?
It's Ben Wallace. I'm thinking the last guy that played that played with the ability, so basically he's a defensive guy and doesn't put any offensive output or relative offensive output, was Ben Wallace. And that was what, 2004?
04, 05. I guess the better question is, when was the last time you saw a team with this kind of offensive prowess win a title?
Well, the last time I remember was guys wearing green and white. And that
Celtics
was in the early 80s. I'm thinking it's the Celtics with Bird, Seasting, Danny Ainge, and Dennis Johnson. And it still wasn't to this degree.
Yeah, I mean, this is such an anomaly of a team where you have so your guards may end up being the greatest shooting backcourt of recent are the best shooting backcourt of recent memory. You have an MVP. You have interchangeable 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", guys in Iguodala and Green and Barnes, and to a lesser degree, David Lee, who I guess is more 6'10". Bogut comes in. You know, it's a team. It's a very strange, it's an extraordinarily enjoyable team to watch. But it's a very difficult team to define and a very difficult team to copy. And,
well, Seth, I'll give you one more. I think they're the best shooting backcourt of all time.
But you have to do things over a period of time. You can't just do it in one year. But for one year, yes, they're as good as anyone I can remember. You don't see Golden State really thinking back on that Klay Thompson, Kevin Love trade, all right, do you?
No. Well, I mean, look, after this year, it's all about staying out of the luxury tax of these guys. So let's look past this year. So Draymond Green is a free agent, which I can't imagine they wouldn't sign. And he's a restricted free agent, so they could sign him to the max, which the 4-year max, maybe 5-year max, 4-year max, which I think they will. And then you're in the penalty. So are you willing to stay in the penalty for 1 year, because David Lee comes off next year, in order to keep this team going? I think if you're Golden State, you do. I think you may actually trade David Lee. If you want to get out of the penalty, you trade David Lee to a team like the Knicks and give him a sweetener, like a first-round pick, and hope that they'll take it, which if you're the Knicks, I think you have to, because you have a ton of cap room and you have nobody to play with it, because I don't think LaMarcus Aldridge is coming to New York. I don't think Marc Gasol is coming to New York. So would you rather have a first-round pick in David Lee or Chris Middleton? I'm thinking you probably want the former rather than the latter. But if you're the Warriors and you win a Stanley Cup, if you win an NBA championship, I think you have to bring the band back together again, considering nobody's over 32.
Yeah, if it does come to, and it seems more and more likely that we're looking at a Cleveland Golden State series. If Kyrie Irving is healthy, this it should be a lot of fun. It should be up and down. I look forward to it. And you know, I think, and you don't want to write them off too quickly, but it does seem that Atlanta and Houston are done. You know, credit to the Hawks. You know, a team that really doesn't seem like ever recovered from Cephalosha getting injured in New York, you know, several months ago. But a team nobody really saw doing anything, a team that's been kind of mired in mediocrity for the better part of the last 15 years, kind of that 6-7-8 seed that was never going to do anything. And to win 60 wins, have 60 wins with that talent, is really the credit to Budenholzer and Danny Ferry, although I guess it's kind of hard to give Ferry credit considering everything that's happened recently. And Houston, you know, I still think they're a player away. Dwight Howard is, you know, as much as we all love to hate on Dwight Howard, he's been very good in the playoffs. Harden has been MVP-esque. The team is, you know, but and all credit for them coming back from 3-1 against the Clippers, because nobody saw it coming. But they're not a team that you look at and say, this is a championship caliber team at this point, or at least I don't.
Wait a second. I said it was coming, right? No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
No, I agree. We'll talk to Lenny Wilkins a little bit more about this. But before Lenny Wilkins comes on, credit to the Chicago Bears today, who cut Ray McDonald. I mean, we're looking at, like, look, on this day, you kind of want to look at good things that happen around the league, right, in all sports. And we'll talk a little bit about Memorial Day and after Lenny Wilkins ends his talk with us. But the fact is that I think in today's society, you unfortunately, you have to make moves before you even think about it. And for the Bears cutting Ray McDonald, I think it was a no-brainer. But what do you think about Adrian Peterson staying away from the Vikings camp at this point? I don't think he has anything really to gain.
No, but it's not a surprise. I think Peterson has intuitively in his head accepted the fact he's going to play with the Vikings this year. I don't think he's particularly happy about it. And I think that was shown by him not showing up at the OTAs. He'll be at the mandatories when they come about. And, you know, it's not a shock. I wasn't surprised at all.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you as well. A couple other things that took place in the NFL since we last spoke. The Giants are in a bit of a dangerous pickle right now. I mean, you lost Will Beatty, who I know you don't like. I mean, granted, I don't think there's a Giants fan alive that really likes Will Beatty, right? But he's better than Justin Pugh. He's probably better than Eric Flowers. And now you're at the point where you have to rely on a second-year man and a rookie to man your two tackle spots.
Yeah. So our safety position, we'll be using a second-year man and a rookie. So this should be no different. But yeah, it's certainly not opportune. And luckily, they did draft the big lineman Eric Flowers from Miami. One other point I want to get to before Lenny Wilkins calls in is the security at the French Open, where the 17-year-old jumps in the middle of center court and takes a selfie with Roger Federer. Now, again, this is the same court, of course, where Monica Seles was stabbed 24 years ago by an obsessed Steffi Graf fan. Federer was understandably annoyed and livid about this situation. Of all the places this that happened, are you surprised that the Roland Garros that this would occur again, Roland Garros, considering the history of in this kind of event?
No, I'm not, and the reasoning is pretty simple: out of sight, out of mind. Right. So yeah, that happened what 20 years ago at this point. Monica Seles, 93, I think it was. Around that time, right? And nothing's happened in 20 years. So, look, when stuff happens, you heighten security. And when stuff doesn't happen, your security may relax a little bit. And that's what I think happened. And, I mean, Federer said it happened last year, too. Well, that's a different story. Maybe there should have been a little bit more security. Is he wrong to be as mad as he is? No. Look, player safety should be number one amongst that. It should be totally amongst that. That you should be able to play your sport and feel safe about doing it, especially when you have this type of history. But look, things happen, right? People run on baseball fields, people run on football fields. And lucky for everybody, all this guy wanted was a selfie. But he's absolutely right. He should, the security should absolutely be there for Roger Federer. And if you'd like to call in and talk to Lenny Wilkins, give us a holler at 760-283-0846. We're going to talk about a litany of things. First of all, he is the coach, or was the coach, excuse me. He's in the coaching history of both these teams in the Eastern Conference Finals between the Cavs and the Hawks. He was the coach of the Seattle Supersonics and played for the Seattle Supersonics. So definitely able to talk to the return of the Seattle Supersonics.
Okay, well, I think he's actually with us right now. Hi, Lenny?
Oh,
Seth.
Hi, you're on with Seth and Sean. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Okay.
Great. Thank you so much, Mr. Wilkins. This is Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens. We really do appreciate your time taking. We'd love to talk to you about a couple of things. First of all, you were the coach of both these teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, 3-0. Is there any shot for Atlanta coming back?
Well, it's always difficult, you know, when you get down like that. But I think that Cleveland is such a dominant team right now, with LeBron playing well and J.R. Smith playing well. I just think it'd be difficult for them to get back.
Well, I guess I want to also talk a little bit. You know, you were brought, you started playing back in the day. You're a Brooklyn boy, and you know,
that's
high school
correct.
basketball in the 60s was so dominated by New York City. It was such a dominant place, and you don't really hear about it too often anymore. You hear Seattle, you hear Oakland, you hear Baltimore. Why is New York City kind of falling off the map a little bit in that high
well,
school?
Well, I think the pro teams have to do a little bit better for it to get back on the map, and the college. You know, college basketball at one time back east was huge, and high school ball was big. And so at that time, you know, people were very interested in it. St. John's had, you know, really a good team. You had NYU had a good team. So there was a lot of good basketball being played in New York. You just don't hear as much right now because a lot of the young players are going out of town to college, and you're going to hear more about it there.
So when you were talking about high school and college, especially in New York, Chris Mullin, now recently hired as the St. John's coach, do you think that will bring a certain cachet with him, maybe bring back a little bit more of that panache that we were talking about just before with Louis Carter II and such?
Yeah, I think so. I think that not only that, I mean, certainly that should help, but I think that the summer programs have to you know, be talked about, have to be sort of built up more. You know, I mean, we were playing basketball on the playgrounds, you know, out at the beaches, everywhere. So it was big then. And I think that has to come alive again, you know. So, you know, the NIT was huge at one time. And I don't think it's that big right now.
Thank you.
So growing up, you played on the streets in New York. Who was the best player you ever saw?
Well, you know, when I grew up, the first sport I played was baseball. Baseball was the big thing. And then I got into basketball. But in basketball, there were guys like, there was a guy named Nerlin Tarrant who played on the playgrounds and was an incredible player. There was a guy named Vinny Cohen who played on the playgrounds. There was Tony Jackson. There was Harvey Saltzman. There was a lot of guys who played, you know, on the playgrounds and played terrific basketball. Not all of them, you know, went on to be pros, but a lot of them were legends growing up in the city.
Well, it's funny you said Vinny Cohen. I believe Vinny Cohen is an alma mater, an alumni of my Syracuse University. I believe that is the same Vinny Cohen, is it not?
Yes. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. He lived
well,
right around the corner from me.
I'll certainly take pride in any Syracuse alum that comes my way. So, look, we're having a down cycle. So any positive pub is a good positive pub.
Lenny, after you played at Providence and had a very successful collegiate career, you go to St. Louis and go to the Hawks for 7-8 years. First of all, how was it playing in St. Louis? And this is, of course, the late 50s, or really the early 60s. Was there a lot of, what were the,
were there a lot of racial issues kind of coming to that team? And that was a team, if I remember correctly, with Bob Pettit and with probably Cliff Hagan and guys on play at really high level of players. How was going to St. Louis initially?
Well, in St. Louis, my first year there, the 60-61 season, I mean, it was tough because you couldn't eat in the restaurants downtown, but a lot of that did change. Now, players like Bob Pettit and Cliff Hagan, they weren't prejudiced, but that was the atmosphere at that time. Living in certain areas, you couldn't buy a house in some areas. For sale, I remember when I first bought a home in Moline Acres, for sale signs went up everywhere. But we dealt with it and showed people that we were as good as anybody else, and that, I think sports helped people to realize that, prejudice wasn't something that we should allow in our country. So, we got through it. But in the beginning, St. Louis was a tough city.
I certainly didn't mean to insinuate that either of those guys were participatory in that. But I do want to ask a little bit. As you grow up, you hear about all these names over the years that were a little bit before our time. Oscar Robertson, Elgin Baylor. And Bob Pettit seems to be a consistent name that everyone has spoken about with such high praise. A guy who was an all-time top 50, probably one of the best players in the game. But never, as the years have gone on, I guess he hasn't gotten as much publicity. And I was just kind of wondering, what was playing with him like?
Well, what happens is you're right. The future seems to kind of take over. I don't think that, maybe the history of the game should show more of guys like Bob Pettit, who was a great player. Like a Elgin Baylor, who was a great player. Oscar Robertson, a guy who averaged a triple-double, a whole season. And had they not changed the way they kept the stats, he might have done it two seasons. But these were great players. And, it's just it's unfortunate that this is the way, time is that everybody looks to the future or looks at the future. But certainly those are guys worth talking about, worth showing whatever video we have on how good these guys were.
Well, Lenny, we were just talking about this right before you came on the show. It's my contention, and you obviously have a little bit more experience and a little bit more knowledge in this than I do, or Steph does, is that Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry are probably the best backcourt shooting-wise I've ever seen. Now, granted, I'm only 39 years old, so I haven't seen as much history as you have. So my question to you is, do you agree with that contention?
Well, I agree that they're two of the best right now. There's no question about it. But Mark Price could shoot the ball as well as anyone. Fred Brown could shoot the ball as well as anyone, But these two guys are special, and especially Curry. I mean, really, he is smart. He sets you up very well. And I think that the two guys playing together make a great combo. So they nothing to sneeze at. These two guys know how to put the ball in the basket. And certainly we should give them a lot of credit. But so does, what's his name? The kid for Houston.
James Harden.
I mean, he can shoot the ball too.
Sure.
When you have great shooters like that, you certainly want to feature them, or you want to help them get good shots. Certainly, Korver can't get his shot like they can, but when you have a player like Korver, you got to run him off of screens. You got to get him. Help him to get wide open so that he can get shot. So you talked about two guys, and they deserve the credit they're getting for being the kind of shooters they are.
Sure. We're looking at the makeup, or at least I was looking at it last night, just the makeup of the Golden State Warriors, and I was talking with Seth a little bit about this, in that they do not have a dominant big man. They do not have a man that plays on the block with regularity. Is the NBA changing? And if so, a guy like Okafor coming out of college, is his draft status going to flip because of the player that he is and that the NBA is going away from that type of player?
Well, you know, I don't think the NBA is going away from that type of player, but when you get the kind of player that Okafor is, okay, you take advantage of it. Any team that, if you don't have a low post player, fine, what do you have? And if you look at the Golden State Warriors, they got guys who can make the 12, 14-foot jump shot or the 25-foot shot. So you take advantage of the talent that you have. It's not so much as saying the NBA is going away from it. If there isn't a low post player in the draft, then what is the best player? And if I'm picking, I'm looking to see, you know, who's going to help me? And as a coach, you take advantage of the talent that is there.
Now, one of the things in regards to Ashley, you were obviously a coach for many, many, many years, but you started off as a player coach after being traded to Seattle. Was this something that Seattle management asked you? Was this a choice that you were given? Something that you were looking to do is probably a better way to articulate that.
Yeah. No, it wasn't something I was looking to do. When I was traded there, after my first year there, they fired the coach and they asked if I would do it. And they felt like I could do it. Dick Birtley was the general manager and he said I was like a player. I was like a coach on the floor anyway. So could I do it? And at first I didn't want to do it, but then eventually I did because I felt like, well, why bring somebody else in who doesn't know the team? I knew the team. I knew what their strengths and weaknesses were and certainly felt like I was able to do it. And so in the first few years, I was able to do it. But the thing that I began to see is that as we got younger and younger players in and they didn't know the game as well because they were coming out of college earlier. Guys were staying in for 1 year or 2 years and coming out. So you had to spend more time teaching, explaining, showing the game. And I realized that I couldn't do it anymore, because it hurt my game. So I had to make a choice, and I decided that in 1975 I would retire and devote full-time to coaching.
And then you did that in Portland, and then you went back to Seattle, where you would win the title in 79, and to this day, the only championship that the Supersonics obviously are no longer there, the only championship that Seattle basketball has ever seen. Was it a team going in? You know, this was a team led, I believe, by Dennis Johnson. Team going in that you thought was a championship team, and then was it a team that you thought could contend going forward for a few years after that?
Well, I did. I believe that. When I came back to Seattle, they had a trade going for Fred Brown, and I avoided that trade because I felt like we were giving away too much. And the players, I helped bring Gus Williams to the team, Lonnie Shelton, and I felt like that those guys could win, and they played hard together. You know, we just took advantage of our talent. We were a pretty good defensive team. We moved the ball. And, it proved successful. And I thought that, it was a great opportunity for us. And it's nothing like winning a championship. When you've been there, you always want to get back.
So, Lonnie, you've coached many different teams for a long time. If you had to pick your starting five of the players that you've coached, who would they be?
Oh, that's always difficult, because I don't know that I could pick just five. You know, we've had some wonderful players I've been able to coach. Gus Williams, Dennis Johnson, Lonnie Shelton, Jack Sigma, Larry Nance, you know, Brad Daugherty, Mark Price, Ron Harper. I mean, you know, those were some guys that I thought really wanted to win and was willing to do whatever it took to win.
Sure. So tell us a little bit of your experience in New York. So I noticed that you didn't name any of your New Yorkers in that list. What was it like coaching in New York as opposed to coaching in Cleveland, Seattle, and Atlanta?
Well, you know, I wanted to coach in New York. I came back for that because having grown up there, and I did turn that team around, irregardless of what people say. I turned that team around because no one thought they could make the playoffs, and we did. But I wasn't real happy with the trades that were made. I mean, we traded two guys who were players off the bench. Doliak, I thought, was who helped us, and I think if we hadn't traded him, that we probably could have, you know, maybe gotten past the first round of the playoffs. Also, the small forward, I can't think of his name right now, played for, I think he played at Brigham Young. Anyway, I thought that those were two guys that we shouldn't have traded, and so I wasn't real happy with how things were going in New York, and that's why I didn't stay.
Oh. I mean, you go to the Hall of Fame as a player, you go to the Hall of Fame as a coach, one of really three or four people to ever do this, along with John Wood and Tommy Heinsohn. But how was coaching? You were an assistant for Chuck Daly on the Dream Team of 92, and you coached the Olympic Championship team in 96. How was being part of the Dream Team?
Well, I thought it was great. You know, I mean, here you have an opportunity to represent your country on a world stage, and working with Chuck Daly. Chuck was fun to work with. I mean, because he listened, he wanted to hear what I had to say. You know, and we had a fun time. We had the best players in the world, and they wanted to win. So they were doing whatever it took. We had magnificent practices, you know, and so it was a fun time. And then in 92, I was his assistant. In 96, I was the head coach and, you know, making all the decisions. And here again, we won the gold medal in 92. We won the gold medal in 96. So it was a great, great experience.
Lenny, we thank you for coming on. We know you do some great things with your foundation, including the Celebrity Classic Weekend, which is being held August 7th through 8th. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, we have every year we have this big dinner auction and golf tournament to raise funds for the Odessa Brown Children's Clinic. And the Odessa Brown Children's Clinic in Seattle provides health care, social services, and education. And irregardless of people's ability to pay, if a lot of people can't afford health insurance, and the clinic gives them the care for free. So it's a, you know, when you have an opportunity to give back to your community and help, you should do it. And I'm very passionate about young people because they're our future. They're tomorrow's citizens, tomorrow's doctors, lawyers, politicians, athletes. And so whatever we can do to help them be successful, I'd like to do that, and that's what our foundation does.
Absolutely.
One more question before we let you go. Seattle, obviously, Seattle, the Supersonics leave in 07. For 8 years, we've been hearing about the next NBA team will be coming, whether it's the expansion or whether it's a move. Do you see Seattle? I mean, you in a lot of ways are the face of Seattle basketball. Do you see an NBA franchise coming to Seattle anytime in the near future?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think Seattle's a tier one city, and it proved that it can support basketball. We have some great young players in the league today who come from the Seattle area. So, no, I'm all for it. I think it will happen. It's not happening fast enough, certainly, for any of us, but I think it will be a part of the future.
Lenny, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
It was my pleasure, guys. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Garland. Good one.
Hi.
Yep. All right. That was Lenny Wilkins, Hall of Famer, both player and coach. Excellent guy. And again, the Lenny Wilkins Foundation runs a celebrity classic weekend that will be held August 7th and 8th. I believe that's in New York at the, I'm looking it up right now. I can't figure that out. Well, if you want to look at LennyWilkinsFoundation.org, you can find out more information about that. We thank him again. That was a great interview, Seth. I'm really happy we had him on.
Yeah, thank you, Randy. For Randy Zellia, the owner of Back Sports Page, for setting that up for us. For those of you who only know him as a coach, because by the time, for the most of us who are listeners, his playing games were well before us. Just to give you an idea, 9-time All-Star on the 50th in the anniversary All-Star team, backup for MVP, a runner-up for MVP in 67 behind Wilt Chamberlain. And the one thing I would have liked to have talked about, we didn't get a chance to too much, was his Hawks teams with Pettit and Hagen. These were very good teams, but they were consistently running against the Lakers, you know, the Lakers and the Warriors, you know, these teams of Baylor and West and Thurman, and, you know, and just they were unable, unfortunately, to really ever make a championship, or at least even to make a championship game. I think they may have made the finals in 60, but no, never again did they I would just like to have heard what playing against these guys would have been like in the 60s. But a great interview, a class act. This is a guy who, when he retired, I believe had won more games as a head coach than anyone in NBA history. Now he was passed by Don Nelson. And
you know,
Don Nelson, I thought it was.
The interesting thing, Seth, is that what you just described about the Atlanta Hawks teams seems to be everything that goes on with Atlanta.
Yeah.
I mean, you look throughout history, their basketball teams, their football teams, their baseball teams, all seem to get into a rut because there are dominant teams that are just a notch ahead of them. You look at the Braves in the 90s and 2000s, and they always seem to run into the Yankees. And you have the Hawks in not only in the 60s, which you're talking about, but let's go to the 80s, the Dominique Wilkins and Kevin Willis Hawks. You run into the Celtics and the Lakers. They just couldn't get over it. It's just symbolic of the Atlanta teams just not being able to get over that hump.
There's no real response to that. It's true. And, you know, Seattle was a huge, huge basketball town. It's kind of point guard. A lot of the big point guards, I believe, are from that area. And, you know, it's a shame. Not that I'm really looking for NBA expansion at this point. But hopefully, if there is a move or if there is an expansion, Seattle is at the forefront.
When we were in Seattle this past summer, I mean, we talked to the locals about getting the NBA back, and it wasn't because of the fans that they weren't there. I mean, that's a ridiculous notion. I mean, if you've seen the 30 for 30 on Seattle, fans in Seattle were more rabid about the Supersonics than any other fan base. I mean, Seattle is a great fan base. It was kind of to the same notion as the Islanders moving to Brooklyn, is that the local government just couldn't get their act together, no matter what happened. So first you have the rabid fan base and a decrepit stadium, but now you need to build a new stadium, and the politicians just couldn't get their act together, so the owner said, we're going to sell. Howard Schultz says, I'm going to sell, and when you have that luxury, you can move a team, which... Look, we all knew Clay Bennett was moving them from the minute that they bought him. So there you go. So I hope that it comes back to Seattle, because that fan base does deserve yet another chance, in my opinion.
No argument on my end either. So we have about 5 minutes to go. Trying to think what we have coming up. As some of you know, I we were unable to tape last week. Sean was at his 300th Mets game of the year, give or take. I think he seems to not be answering. Hello, Sean.
No, I'm just ignoring it. Ignoring you.
I was out in L.A. taping Sports Jeopardy for Crackle TV. I am not allowed by law to state how it went, but it was an enjoyable experience. Got to meet Dan Patrick, and it was a lot of fun. And I will heavily recommend Mr. Palmer to try out, and I will get him the information so he can get on the show next year.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, look, 5 minutes left, our last segment of our last segment and our final thoughts. But before we do that, we will be having the NBA draft preview coming up. That will be the week before Seth's wedding. We will be taping our show a week from this Sunday on the ride back from Atlantic City from Seth's bachelor party. I'm sorry to report that Nabate Ayles will not be in attendance. I know this is news to Seth, but he will not be in attendance. So it'll be, he has like a 20th anniversary, 20th reunion from high school. So he will be at the Yankee game the night before, where we might tape some segments, but he will not be at the bachelor party himself. But Brian Kreider will be subbing in, so myself, Seth, and Brian could do our show on that Sunday. So stay tuned to that. And then we will be having, obviously, our recap after the wedding. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to that Monday, where it's myself, Seth, Mr. Ayles, and a plethora of other guests that will be coming on the show. But we have about 3 minutes left. Let me just say one thing before I go, and then Seth. Thank you very much to all of our veterans. Today is Memorial Day in the U.S. I know that there is a 3-day weekend in England as well for some reason, but to all our veterans that have given their lives, and I don't mean just paid the ultimate sacrifice, but given their lives in service to our country, thank you from the bottom of our hearts for the ability to speak the way that we do, both on the air.
Well, it looks like Sean cut out or hung up or I don't know what happened. I want to echo his sentiments for in regards to Memorial Day and, a thank you, obviously, to all the veterans that allow us our freedoms and to elaborate. I guess it's such a given that we probably don't articulate it enough. So it's most sincere thanks from both of us. Thank you for Lenny Wilkins for calling in, Randy Zellia for running the board today, for my partner in crime, Mr. Palmer. This is Seth Damon. Seth and Sean, Sports Radio, sportsbridge.com. Check us out on iTunes, on the Blog Talk Radio, and Blog Talk Radio. We'll talk to you next Monday. Bye, everybody.